Good evening. I'd like to call the April 16th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mr. Shinagawa?
Here.
Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chuck?
I am here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera? Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. McAsee?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robinson has asked to be excused. Ms. Robinson?
Here.
We have 13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications around the desks.
Before we go any farther, I would like to ask for a moment of silence for the victims in the Boston Marathon bombing yesterday. At last report that I saw, more than 150 have been wounded, and three have died. Two identified as Crystal Campbell, 29, and Martin Richard, age 8. Thank you. The reports of not just the first responders running towards the danger, but citizens, spectators, other runners running towards the people who were hurt to help out inspire us all. Thank you. I have a number of proclamations today, and if there's we're not clear if a representative of each of these organizations is here, if you are, please would ask you to come forward. Fair Housing Month. And I'd like to proclaim the year-long April 2013, as Fair Housing Month in Tompkins County, beginning a year-long commemoration of the U.S. Fair Housing Law in Tompkins County. So we will send that to the appropriate party. Sexual Assault Awareness Month. All right, then I will proclaim that April is nationally recognized as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And Donate Life Month. It's a busy month. So this is concerning organ donation, and that's also being recognized as April 2013, Donate Life Month. So we will send those on. I guess the next thing is public privilege of the floor. And I have a few people signed up. Renee Spear and then Abby Lyons. We have a 3-minute time limit, and Kathy will help you keep track.
Thank you so much. Yes, my name is Renee Spear. I work for Catholic Charities. I'm the executive director for Tompkins and Tioga area. And just wanted to give a little overview of what we do and how important Catholic Charities is to the community. Catholic Charities' mission is to help the low to moderate income families, and you do not have to be affiliated with being a Catholic. We help anybody and everybody in that bracket. We have helped over 3,000 individuals in Tioga County in 2012, which has doubled in the last 5 years. Our Samaritan Center provides urgent, short-term assistance to the low and moderate income families and individuals in immediate crisis. Since 1997, Catholic Charities has helped thousands of individuals and households with one-time cash assistance to avoid disruptions in gas or electric services, keeping their car on the road so they can get to employment or to school, and purchase prescription medications. Samaritan Center participants are provided access to our free clothing closet, and personal care products. We also have contracts and grants that allow us to provide security deposit to homeless and some low-income individuals, and we also help to enroll people in food stamps. Catholic Charities is really the last resort for many families within this community. Families who walk through our doors have already visited many other agencies and been turned down for assistance. So we're really the last resort for some of them to get the assistance. We work in partnerships with a lot of local service agencies, the local faith community, and interfaith groups to address gaps in services, to respond to urgent needs of individuals and families in the community. And we have a history of helping all those in need with great empathy and compassion. We also provide services to over 200 immigrants per year.
One more minute.
We have helped approximately 100 immigrants per year to become U.S. citizens. We have also helped with providing ESL and job development. And we are now have become the Office of New American Office on West Buffalo Street, also through a grant. Our work is guided in two main objectives: to help the needs of the community's most vulnerable people and to challenge conditions that cause poverty and despair. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming. The next speaker, Abby Lyons, and then Faye Gugakis.
Hi, I'm really appreciative of the opportunity to tell all of you in the county legislature about the programs of the Ithaca Help Alliance, of which I am the executive director. Our mission is to facilitate access to health care for all with a focus on the needs of the uninsured. We do that through three programs. Our largest program right now is the Ithaca Free Clinic, where we provide services through the generosity of volunteers who provide medical services, holistic services, who check people in at the reception desk and check them out at the discharge desk. All of those folks are volunteers except for our one paid clinic coordinator, and we provide services 3 afternoons and evenings a week to people who do not have insurance or who do not have insurance for the holistic services that they're coming to us for. We also have a financial assistance and advocacy program, the Ithaca Health Fund, which was our original program, and we are just about to relaunch that program with some new definitions based on income qualification. And in addition to providing actual financial assistance for certain limited categories of health care that are not covered by any other insurance or financial assistance program, we are assisting people in accessing all of those programs. And finally, we have an education program to try and raise the level of awareness of taking care of ourselves for everyone in the community, especially the people that we serve, but we all can take better care of ourselves. We are one of the gap fillers, and in the coming 2 years, as the Affordable Care Act begins to change the health insurance landscape, we anticipate that our services will still be needed, although we may be changing our focus as we discover what gaps there are. It's going to be a big learning process for all of us, everyone in the community. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Abby. Faye Gugakis, and if anyone else would like to speak, they're welcome to come to the mic after Faye.
Faye Gugakis, City of Ithaca. I got this in the New York Times Magazine, and it is a picture of a new car, and as you can see, the windows are tinted incredibly dark. You cannot see who's driving this, okay? I'm going to pass this around. You can meditate on this while I'm talking. Why am I bringing this to you? I've done this countless of times. Behind those dark windows, somebody is texting. Somebody's talking on their cell phone. And it's wonderful that all these other organizations have campaigns, but never have I seen a campaign locally about texting and cell phone use. Okay, yes, the laws are on the books, but what have we done as a community? Last night I was at a lecture on the environment up on campus. Everything from recycling and the environment and toxic waste, but never did that person talk about the cell phone issue. how we are living with the digital world. Okay, it's always put aside because it's a new phenomenon, but it's a phenomenon that's going to come around and bite everybody. These cars are being mass-produced as we speak, okay? We don't allow tinted windows in our community, yet I pass cars all the time with tinted windows. I cannot see the driver. Now, you're going to say, okay, like Frank said, oh, Faye's going to come back and say the same thing again and again. And I will, until we realize how dangerous it is. The other week, 200 and some people came and talked about safety. You know, where is the connection with that? When I went to the safety committee that Peter Stein invited me to, I spoke with the chief, the sheriff, and he said to me, yes, I agree with you, Faye, the tinted windows are a problem because somebody with a gun could be behind that tinted window. Okay? It's really hard to say all this in 3 minutes, but what I'm trying to paint here is that we're headed in a very dangerous path. We talk about guns and think that that's only the problem. There are the video games, which I've also mentioned to you. On the PBS NewsHour, they interviewed several people a couple of weeks ago or a month ago.
And one more minute.
It was very interesting that Obama is listening to the one educator who said, you know, I looked at video games and there's no connection between the violence and the video game. Then they interviewed a researcher. I don't know where he was. I didn't write it down, but I'm sure we can find out. He was a researcher who's in process of investigating the correlation. And he's finding that there is a connection. Okay? But Obama and the administration, they don't want to look at video games. And like I've said to you before, when you look at some of these video games, they're sick. Who are these people making these video games that our children are watching?
30 seconds.
So what I'm trying to say, and I will come back and continue this discussion, that all this is related. It's related. We are creating a very dangerous society. I mean that with all my heart. And I know, like, I'm minimized by a lot of people, but I know in my heart that I'm right. Okay? Because, you know, I ride a bicycle. We're going to have a sustainability conference.
Finish
I
up,
ride
Pat.
A bicycle every day, and my heart is pounding a mile a minute because I'm petrified. So what's more sustainable than riding a bicycle, right? And if I'm afraid to ride a bicycle, well, that's what it's all about. Right?
Thank you, Faye. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thanks very much. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? I see a couple of municipal officials in the audience. Dominic or Dan, would you like to address the legislature as a municipal official? Okay. Thank you. Then the first legislator for privilege of the floor is Will Burbank.
We could have our honored guests come forward. Folks, if you could walk through a gate over there and just come right up here, please. And your family is welcome to come. Ms.
We're shy.
You're shy? Okay. Aww. Please do. Please do. Okay. And you folks are welcome to take pictures if you have a camera or whatever. So. Well, I would like to introduce Kai Haskins and his principal at New Roots, Tina Nilsson-Hodges. Kai came to our attention due to a letter that was written by Dr. Sandra Steingraber, who had taken note of Kai's work in the environmental realm, specifically around fracking. And I'm just going to read a little bit of what he has done. Kai is in 11th grade at New Roots. He resides in Enfield. He's generous in bringing his considerable talents to service his school and the wider Tompkins County community. Kai is an environmental activist concerned with issues of climate change and environmental impact of our energy choices locally. He's an actor who has performed in many local productions. He uses his gifts in the areas of communication and drama to increase community awareness about hydraulic fracturing. For instance, as a member of the Green Umbrella, Kai has done community public events and speaking in Enfield relating to the fracking ban attempt there. Other local initiatives he's taken include writing an anti-fracking comic book and a children's history book, and starring in a one-act comedy that was called Frack You, written by Binghamton playwright Laura Cunningham. And this was performed by Kai and other New Roots students in the State Theater in November. So that's kind of why he came to his attention, but I called Tina and learned that he's been a really important president at New Roots. And Tina, would you like to say a few things?
Thank you. I could go on and on, so I prepared a few remarks. I think the one thing I wanted to bring forward, in addition to the inspiring work that Kai has done, bringing his considerable artistic talents to bringing to life the questions that we all live with about fracking, both to, you know, children with the comic books for sixth graders, as well as a brilliant performance on the State Theater stage. As actually Jazz, a cafe owner who has a very different perspective on fracking than Kai does. So Jazz is jazzed about the idea of making a lot of money because of his mineral rights. And Kai really brought the stage to light in portraying that character very sympathetically. I mean, I think all of us came away with a much deeper understanding of why it is that this is really an issue that has many facets, and that it's not simple, right? It's about people's lives and livelihoods and our economy, as well as our environment, and it really bears careful consideration and witness from all of us. Additionally, I wanted to say that Kai is an outstanding student leader at New Roots Charter School, which is a school committed to education, bringing together a public school, which is a living laboratory for education, for sustainability and social justice. Many students of Kai's caliber choose a well-traveled path to college at this time in their lives. Kai has chosen to be a founder of a new public school, and he brings every day an energy to leadership in developing that school that's really a powerful force in inspiring fellow students to be part of realizing the school's mission and vision, which is a major factor in our small and growing school's success. He's a founding member of our student orientation team, which welcomes in new students and orients them to our very different school model. Kai's teachers commend him for being a natural leader whose intellectual enthusiasm is infectious. As his science teacher, David Strive, has commented, Kai approaches the work we do in science with a sense of wonder and fascination, yet he demonstrates a highly refined ability to apply logic and scientific reasoning to experiments and applied concepts. His maturity and leadership have a ripple effect throughout the classroom, making it easy for others to get involved. According to his English teacher, Carrie DeLisa, Kai's most important leadership quality is he's not afraid to defend teachers or school policies, even when some are unpopular among friends or classmates. He chooses to often take the most unpopular thought or issue and help others see the meaning behind it. Kai Haskins lives a core value that New Roots hopes to cultivate in students. One is an entrepreneurial spirit. Another is the awareness that youth can make a contribution today and every day in their communities, not simply be looking forward to the next stage in their life and preparing for that, but really thinking about where they are and how they want to make a contribution right now. So Kai Haskins distinguishes himself from many other fine young people that I know by living each day to the fullest in service to his school and his community, bringing his multifaceted talents to making impacts with ripple effects that increase the quality of life for us all. Thank you very much.
So we have an official plaque for you, Kai. It says, it's the Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award presented to Kai Haskins in recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community on April 2013, and it is co-sponsored by Bangs Ambulance Service, the Tompkins County Legislature, Cuba Radio Group, Purity Ice Cream, and AMB Awards Engravings. And
thank you.
We also have a little goodie bag of things that I think you'll find enjoyable. And I'm going to ask you if you would like to say a few words.
Sure.
Okay. And before you do that, I want to give a shout-out to your family, who apparently is shy, but way in the back are Kai's two moms, his grandma, and his brother. So we're really glad you joined us. Please.
You stole my words. I was just going to give a shout-out to
Yeah, so I guess I just want to say thank you to Ms. Tina, Sandra Steingraber, and my two wonderful mothers who are here, and my little brother, even though he was just kicking me in the shins. And my grandmother, who heard about this on, like, Sunday and then came all the way out, which was very sweet.
Good. Okay.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Will. Before we go to other legislators, I will mention that I'm going to reorder some of the business so that Carol Kamen can be part of Resolution I, but without staying all night. Jim was the first legislator. Jim?
Thank you very much. I want to give some props to a play that I saw recently at the Kitchen Theater. And just so I can keep this so it can get printed, it's called The Mofo with the Hat. And, it's a play that's been done all over the United States, and Rachel Lempert and Margaret Perry, who was the director, brought it here to the Kitchen Theater. And I'm just going to comment right out of the playbill, because clearly the words are better than anything I can think of. But it said, wildly funny, takes no prisoners, fearlessly examines fidelity, addiction, and relationships. And that's a trifecta to me. Time Out New York also gives hope to users, boozers, and losers, they say in their review. And someone actually said it was like the modern version of Ralph Cramden and the Honeymooners. It's an incredible play. The five actors did a great job, and I would suggest to anyone that they go see that if they could.
Thank you, Jim. Pam.
Well, I just wanted to thank. That's terrible. Well, I can't remember her name. She just left.
Amy.
What? Faye Gugakis.
Faye.
For coming and speaking to us. I have been listening to Faye for many years, both on Common Council and here. And Faye should not be dismissed, because many times Faye is the canary in the coal mine. What she has to say is very important to us. I think that her concern about tinted windows is well-founded. I'm not sure that we are the ones that can do anything about this in any kind of effective way, but I really do appreciate the fact that she takes the time, she cares about her community enough that she takes the time to think about these things and come and speak to us about them.
Thank you, Pam. Anyone else? All right, we'll go down the line. Frank, Kathy, Carol, Will, Mike.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a couple of items I wanted to mention. Last Wednesday, there was a benefit concert given for three local organizations. One of them was the Health Alliance, and Abby was just here speaking on behalf of it. The second was FoodNet. And the third, I'm drawing a blank on. Sorry, Pam.
Bay?
It could be. It was held up at the crossroads. It was very nice, and it was an opportunity to support an organization that sadly was, as I reported a couple of weeks back, got hurt by the sequestering action, and there was an opportunity to sit in and listen to students from IC and Cornell. It was very, very well done. And if you haven't been to the crossroads, you should go. It's really a very nice place to attend one of those. The other item that I wanted to mention to you is the upcoming luncheon, annual luncheon for the Office for the Aging That is going to be, you should have received a notice that looks like this in your boxes. It's May 21st. It's a Tuesday, and it's going to be at the Clarion up at Trip Hammer. Please try to attend. This is always a really nice event to sit in on, and they always have a decent guest speaker. The last item is something that I'm going to ask Pat Pryor about a little later on. I'd like to know how much of the county, if we know this, is covered by Frontier Communications, principally because of the shortfall in funding for broadband to cover the town of Caroline. If that's something that we know, Frontier Communications is the phone company that covers part of the southern part of the county from Dryden, Caroline, and into actually part of Danby also. If that's a question that you might be able to answer, I'd appreciate it. The reason I'm asking is in Frontier's annual report, the president wrote a letter saying that they received during 2012 and 2013 $71.9 million from the Federal Communications Commission Connect America Fund. This is the universe. Remember all the talk, my favorite topic next to NYSEG is the Universal Fund? If they're drawing $71 million out of that fund, the purpose is, you ready? To support broadband deployment to underserved and unserved high-cost areas. And let me tell you, if the southern part of Tompkins County is not an underserved area on broadband, I don't know which one is. I'm going to pursue this a little bit, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about it, Pat, because there is all this money that anyone with a landline or a cell phone is kicking into this fund, and you have been for quite some time. We ought to be able to get, how much are we short? $500,000?
Well, because of the fact that the build-out cannot all be done at the same time, it's going to cost more than it would have had we been able to do it all at once. So we were about $500,000 short in terms of what we asked for, but in order to do it later rather than do it now, it's going to take closer to $750,000 to do it when we finally are able to do the remainder of the county.
Well, I don't know what other phone companies received or didn't receive, but I know Frontier covers a good share of the southern part of this county. And out of this $72 million, maybe they can find $750,000 to send our way. Be nice to have that. And I'll talk to you about it.
I'd be happy to meet with you about that.
Thank you. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Good find, Frank. Kathy Luce?
Thank you. I had a list of about 20 things, but this is the one that rose to the top. There's a discussion right now on the Fall Creek listserv, and I think it's something that should be talked about at the county level simply because it's something that we kind of touch on in our county comprehensive code, and that is the notion of eliminating parking requirements. I want everybody in the city and in the county to be thinking about that. Oh, did I take one of your things?
That's fine.
I have another one that I'm not going to take. Okay. We're discussing on the listserv right now because a few weeks ago there was a guest editorial from one of my neighbors and y'all's, Rob Studeville, and talking about form-based codes and the importance of eliminating parking requirements to helping us raise the density level in downtown and other dense areas and its effect on economic development. There's some possible problems with that, and I had posted the article to the listserv, and today I got an email from someone saying there's a guest editorial about this in the paper today saying that easing or eliminating parking requirements is unfair to seniors and to other people. And although the guest editorial used different words than some of us would have used, it actually brought up the issues in a very good way, talking about elders and people that might not be as mobile and how, you know, there needs to be some concern given to that. So I posted it to the listserv, and already there's a firestorm, which tells me that people want to talk about this, that we need to be educated about this, and that the city, after all, a lot of us on the county, I don't know about y'all, but we, when we were adopting our comprehensive plan, we talked about, gee, if only the city had long-term plans for growth. And guess what? They're doing it. They're trying. And I think this is important. And so I wanted people to hear about it and to be thinking about it and study up on it, because it's very cool that we're trying to move forward with these kind of things, and your input is needed. There's a lot of really educated people about this, about transportation and public planning in this community, and I think we're going to see in the next few weeks and months a lively discussion, not just about parking requirements, but form-based codes. And if somebody else doesn't get around to this, I'm going to jump in shortly at the very end.
Okay.
But I bet somebody else is going to get to it.
Thank you, Kathy. Carol?
Oh, boy. Thank you, Martha, for the moment of silence. A moment is not nearly enough. Thank you, Kathy, for bringing up parking. I will just point out that it was one of my constituents, Ann Sullivan. I want to thank her for presenting the point of view that she did. And I will just say this parking, it's a complex issue. It shouldn't have to be a choice between smart growth, figuring out the ways to improve our communities in terms of growth, and taking care of our neighborhoods. It needs to just be done in a comprehensive way rather than one piece at a time. That's all I'll say about that. What I wanted to talk to you about tonight are two opportunities to hear some very interesting conversation. Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, you all should have gotten something, I don't know if it's in your box or at home, about their annual meeting this Thursday, April 18th, from noon to 2 p.m. I was going to say this at the end, but I'll get your attention. They provide free lunch, I believe, and it's below that $50 a person limit for our gifts, and they provide it to everybody who comes. They ask that you make a reservation if you can. They will be having an interesting panel presentation in addition to their annual recipients of the Florence Horde Beautification Award and the Lucy Brown Leadership Award. There'll be a panel presentation on living in Tompkins County, what does the future hold? The panelists will include Rick Manning, who will talk about recreation and open space, Martha Armstrong, who will talk about our economy, Fernando Darragon, who will talk about transportation, and, of course, Paul Mazzarella, who will talk about in terms of housing. You'll have another opportunity to hear Paul and many other people at this weekend at the Climate Smart, Climate Ready Conference, which I have mentioned before, but today came armed with literature. I didn't print these. Thank you to whoever provided them. I encourage you to bring these to the conference and use the backs for your notes on all the interesting things that will come out at this conference. There are tracks and sessions at this on everything from ecosystems and renewable energy, which you would expect. I don't know if people have seen the recent research that came out that the seas are rising much, much faster than had been initially anticipated, and anticipating as much as many 12 to 20 feet underwater in maybe the next few decades. Weather, there'll be sessions on weather, law, insurance, agriculture, grief, food, media, business, and buildings. I may have left out a few, and among other many, many participants listed in the handout there is our own Ed Marks and Katie Borghella. So I encourage you to come to some or all of that. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Carol. Where is the INHS luncheon? Because I'm already picturing the Women's Community Building.
Holiday, oh, Holiday you Inn. Are right.
The Holiday Inn.
Thank
Thank you.
Which has also been a venue in the past for that.
Okay. Thanks very much. Will and then Mike.
Thank you, Carol, for mentioning the Climate Smart. Just looking at this, I realized it didn't include the kickoff event, which is actually Thursday night at the Hangar, and it's going to be a talk by the author of a book called Hot, how we adapt to climate change. So this Thursday is the first event. And thank you, Martha, for the moment of silence. As you know, several of us have children and loved ones living in the Boston area. Our sons lived there for a number of years, and it's actually run in the marathon, and had been planning to go and look at the one this year. We learned about these horrible events because we got an email from him saying, "I'm all right," and we said, "What does this mean?" And we can only begin to imagine the pain the families are feeling for those that are not all right. But thank you. And thanks, another note, Jim, thanks for mentioning that play. Like we saw it on Sunday. It was an amazing play. And this is already by a very high standard of plays at the Kitchen Theater. But do not miss the play whose name cannot be not be stated. And if you go, chances are you're going to buy your ticket from our combined ticketing center, which is a really, really important institution. It's been going for a number of years, whereby they've combined the resources of the local theaters, State Theater, Kitchen, Hangar, IC, and had a place where you could walk in, get a ticket. As you may have heard, this system is run into some problems. And on Friday, I had the good experience of sitting with representatives from those organizations, including board members, to try to re-envision what the ticketing system would be. And I see in the audience Brett is with us. I don't know if Brett wants to add anything. I will try to quickly walk by what I know about it. Over the past 18 months, the major clients of the center have expressed concerns over the current model. The service is currently being subsidized by the county through the room tax to the tune of about $22,000 a year, and actually is average more like $27,000 since 1997. And as part of the requirement to receive grants under the Arts and Cultural Organization Development grants, we require that organizations participate in that. It was originally created to provide greater accessibility to the arts for the residents and visitors and to serve the theaters and performing arts in a way that allows them to both maintain service level standards and reduce costs. But as I say, the model has run into some problems. The organizations are struggling to come up with something that will work. And this is going to be happening over the next couple of months. If you care about the arts, please encourage people to come together and keep this live. That is my report.
Thanks very much, Will. I've got Mike and then Leslin.
Two topics I want to talk about tonight. One is you may have read about dam safety, an issue that's come up across New York State. The governor's been looking at that. And we have several dams in Tompkins County. And one of those I was very proud about was the dam in Dryden, the Donald H. Crispell Flood Control Project, the one that has the county connection to it. And that is something that we have been very proactive about maintaining with the town of Dryden and the village of Dryden. We allocated some funds earlier this year to help with the important inspection that had to be done of that, including divers that went through the culvert that goes through the dam. That dam is an amazing thing. It has some important safety features, and two of them are the fact that, first of all, it doesn't hold water back almost all the time. Only when there is actually a heavy rain or flooding condition does it actually hold water back and slow it down. Secondly, if it ever gets to the point where it reaches what has been calculated as the 100-year flood level, before it would go higher than that and possibly overtop the earthen dam, there's a great big huge trench that goes around the dam at the 100-year level And so additional water would then flow around the dam and never overtop the dam. And that trench is something to look at. It's probably as wide as a football field is long. And it just would channel water around the dam so that the dam would not hopefully ever have a catastrophic event. There is a dam safety plan for the town and village, and it's part of that dam. And we always need to be vigilant about these things, but I want to reassure folks about that. Yeah, I want to talk about TC3 a little bit. You probably all got letters in the mail today inviting us to the annual budget presentation at the college that we go out to every year. Hopefully as many people as possible can go to that. That's on the 10th. We have talked informally with Cortland County, as many of us know in some of our meetings, about what we can do for the TC3 budget in the future. We know that the college is having more difficult times this year than it has in the past few years. I was approached again by Cortland County and asked about another luncheon meeting of the two legislatures like we've had before. And we're focusing on two dates, May 1st and May 3rd, for a luncheon. You know, that's a Wednesday and a Friday. And we'd like to have as many legislators that could come. You'll get a meeting wizard or something to try to see how many we can get for one of those days. Certainly as many legislators in our administration that would like to come to that and talk about that and other issues that are common to our counties. Also would mention that TC3 labor negotiations are underway. They're moving fairly rapidly. They're trying to focus on the issues that are naturally the most important to both the college employees and to administration out there. But they will have more to report on that soon. And last, the commencement is May 23rd for TC3. We've all received letters of invitation or emails of invitation. You're welcome to come to that. They love to have legislators come. If you either attend the commencement or if you'd like to participate in the procession, they'll make arrangements for that. If you want to do that, please call Kathy Northrup at the president's office at the college or email her, and she'll help you with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Leslin.
Thank you, Martha. There are a few things I wanted to mention very quickly. We've been getting a lot of press releases and just news release from our law enforcement units about some of the unfortunate crime that's happening in our community that's affecting us, our neighbors. So it's just a reminder to everyone that as the weather gets nicer, I know it's easy for us to, you know, jump out of our cars, to leave them, to leave windows down, et cetera. We've all been cooped up for a while, and we just want to enjoy it. But there's been a lot of, you know, car prowling is what they call it. You know, people getting into cars and stealing and affecting folks in ways that they're not very comfortable, some of them talking about. So just be mindful, you know, public service announcement, to make sure that you lock up. Don't leave things in the window that's valuable, that you can see, your keys in the car, any number of things, but especially leaving doors and windows open. The same thing goes for our houses and apartments. I think it was last year, as the weather got nice, we had a rash of people going into homes because the doors were open and stealing phones, you know, big commodities. So please just be mindful of that. To not do that. Kathy talked about the parking requirements and encouraging folks to pay attention to the development, to try to attend meetings and share your opinion, to call your representatives at the city level and let them know, but there's also the issue of zoning changes that are being proposed. I know there's a meeting in the works, I don't have a date just yet, that is being considered at the city level, so we do want to encourage people to pay attention and attend the meetings and share your thoughts and comments. I hear from folks, but I know that it would be useful for the members of City Council and the mayor to also hear from them as well. The Downtown Ithaca Alliance, last night was their board meeting, and there are a number of things I just wanted to share quickly. Started back on April 1st through May 30th, is the Adopt a Panel. I don't know if you all have seen this, but part of what, with the reconstruction of the commons, part of what the Downtown Ithaca Alliance is offering to do is to sort of beautify. You ever seen a beautiful construction area? Well, this is what we're attempting to do, to have boards, certain feet or dimensions that is not just your regular old chain link fence and yellow tape covering it off, but have boards and inviting artists in our community to adapt a board, to paint them, businesses as well, to put some percentage of it, your logo can go, and then some public art so that as you pass by the construction area, it's like I said, it's more than just the chain link fence. It's beautiful art, and at some point there will be a decision about what to do with that art. So please pay attention, all you current artists, budding artists, wannabe artists, and businesses, to adopt a panel. On the 27th, the Downtown Ithaca Alliance also has hosted for the last few years a downtown living tour and expo. So for people who might have an interest in living downtown, landlords may open up an apartment, some who are new or others who are there, we're going to take a look and see, you know, here's, you know, what we have to offer downtown if folks are interested. So that's happening April 27th from 1 to 4. Tomorrow morning, sorry, for the late notice, understanding the value of downtown development is a topic being presented by a gentleman by the name of Joe Menikazi. I think I'm pronouncing that right. tomorrow morning, really getting people to understand why downtown matters, why the downtown is the economic core of many communities, some communities not that much, matter. So that's happening, and we want to encourage the public who may have concerns. People have talked about why are we investing all this money in developing, you know, redeveloping the commons, aside from the danger, you know, factors or, you know, some of the issues that just needed to be fixed. But there is more to it than just that. Downtowns do matter, and so we encourage people to try and attend. I'm trying to remember where it is, and I can't, or to get that information. I couldn't get it right now. If I remember, I'll let you know. And last but not least, I also want to say that, again, with the nice weather comes our festivals. The good stuff, and there's a lot of them coming up, like from our big Ithaca Festival, which will happen. Let me repeat that, will happen. There's a lot of folks say, oh, where are we going to put it? The Commons is not going to be available. Well, it will be happening downtown, like it always did, and at Stewart Park. May 30th, I think, through, I remember what day, June 2nd or 3rd. Anyhow, it is happening. Before the Ithaca Festival, however, on June 3rd, is a new festival that is being organized by young people in our community. We used to have the Arts and Culture Festival. I think, Martha, you had some involvement for youth. This is the International Youth Arts and Culture Festival. Some young people who had been part of the Natural Leaders Initiative are doing this. Started this as a project. It's happening on the 3rd. It's a Friday from noon to 7 at Stewart Park. Youth of all ages, middle and high school, are invited to participate, bring their art, bring their culture, all of those things and come be a part of the festival. That is followed on the Sunday, June 5th, with Streets Alive.
May or June?
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Friday, May 3rd, is IAC, International Youth Arts and Culture Festival. And June 5th, Kathy, I'm looking to you, see if you know that date, Sunday, is Streets Alive.
Woo!
Generally in the Fall Creek area, but it's going to expand a little bit down to Court Street. It's where, you know, we close off a portion of the street and encourage neighbors to come out, get to know each other, play some good old hopscotch in the street, and hula hooping, bam, come on down, you know, get on your unicycle, do your thing. All of that, and just really have a fun family time in the streets. No cars, you know, just be on foot, get to know folks. There's no better way to fight crime sometimes in our neighborhood than to know who our neighbors are and to also know that they got our backs. So we encourage you to stop by and check it out. Part of Streets Alive, like I said, will extend in front of GIAC on that Court Street block. And there'll be all kinds of things happening there. You know, we might just form us a legislature team to join in the three-legged race. So I encourage you to pay attention to all the things that are happening in our community and try to participate. Thank you.
Oh, we need a calendar there.
Yes, it's full.
Thank you, Leslie. I've got Peter and then Jim.
Well, I just wanted to say a few words about the tragedy that took place in Boston and my own thoughts. Boston is a place that has a really special place in my heart. As I grow older, I realize that the times that are sharpest in my memory are the times, those 5 years between when I was 17 and when I was 22. That was the year when my life began, and it remains in strong, stark colors. I can see that time. And a lot of that time, for me, was spent in Copley Square, which is where this bomb was set off. Copley Square is where the main branch of the Boston Public Library was, and when I was in high school, I used to come down there. I can still remember exactly what that subway stop was like, getting off at Copley Square and going out, and I remember where you went into the front of the library, and I'd go there to write papers, and spent a lot of time there writing papers, hoping I'd run into some girl that was sitting across from me writing a paper. It never happened, but it was always in my mind. And a little bit older, I remember there was a movie theater that was close to Copley Square where I learned about un-Hollywood or non-Hollywood movies, where I saw The Bicycle Thief for the first time, if you know that, or Open City, or all of that magnificent Italian movies that came out at that period of time. And I even remember times, places I used to go with my girlfriend there, who you all know. And I even remember one time I was there. I'm not a person that goes to sporting events a lot. I was there for a marathon in Copley Square that was a tremendous shock. Not as big as this one, but a tremendous shock came over the people that I knew and everybody in Boston when the marathon was won for the first time by someone who wasn't American, a Korean by the name of Yun Bok Soo. It had such an effect on me that I still remember his name. That was a big shock. Nobody thought anyone could win a marathon who wasn't American. So anyway, it's horrible to me to think of that, those nice memories.
Yes,
to be what's happened there. So that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter. Jim.
Leslin, the meeting with Joe Minicozzi is tomorrow morning, the 17th at 8:15 at QC3, 6th floor, I guess.
The conference room.
Tioga Place.
Yes. And just for the record, Mr. Minicazzi is supposed to be one of the country's foremost experts on the economics of downtown development. So this is, it ought to be good. 8:15 to 10 in the morning. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Kathy Lewis?
One more. I found the announcement. Just want to say, anybody know who Dorothy Cotton is? Who doesn't know who Dorothy Cotton is, right? She's a local luminary and played a huge part in the civil rights movement, walking side by side with Martin Luther King. She has a new book. I think it's If Your Back Ain't Bent. And those who know Martin Luther King's quotes, will that'll bring a smile to your lips. If not, well, you got to come out and to the book signing Sunday, April 21st, 3 to 4 p.m. She's a wonderful person just to talk to, and this is a great opportunity. I'm going to take a few minutes and watch her while I'm standing in line and then get her signature on the book. It's a historic moment. Hope y'all can take advantage of it. It's at Barnes & Noble, Sunday, yes. April 21st, 3 to 4 p.m., Dorothy Cotton's new book, If Your Back Ain't Bent, or something close
to that. No one can ride you.
Yes.
The book is If Your Back Ain't Bent, but the quote is, If Your Back Ain't Bent, no one can ride you.
That's it.
Dooley.
Returning to the climate comments that were earlier in dam safety, the all-hazard mitigation plan for the county is in its final days of being finalized, and it follows a format that I guess is given to us from the state, or maybe it's the feds, but it does not have a heading that simply says climate change is a hazard. And it would be really nice if we could insert something like that in our comments. I know the comments will deal with flooding and dam safety and storm events, but tying it all together would be a good thing. And it's nice to hear different legislators making these connections. I used to feel lonely on this legislature when I would make climate or energy or environmental comments, and now there's so many who do it. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Julie. Anyone else? Thank you all. From my report, a couple of items. It was reported yesterday that there was a meeting with Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Small Business Agency Administrator Karen Mills up at Bine Optics in the Cornell Business Park. And Joe and I were able to go there. The issue of the airport, the question was, you know, the topic was, how to energize and support small business. So we brought up the issue of the airport and the closure of the control tower, which, of course, has been probably saw the news that the impending closures have been delayed till middle of June. A number of people spoke about it, and Senator Gillibrand said, I will write a letter tomorrow. So, and then Joe got in touch with Amanda Spellacy from Senator Schumer's office, who we met with last week, mostly on the same issue. And she said, great, we will coordinate offices. So our two senators will be weighing in and working on that issue. And Joe has really spearheaded this and put a lot of information together, so they have that at their disposal. And we're hopeful that that'll make a difference, very hopeful. This next one, this is getting really, I don't like doing this, but I have to tell you that we are remembering Howard Hartnett today. Maybe you didn't know that he passed away, was it yesterday, this morning? He apparently was sick for a couple of weeks and with a staph infection in the hospital, and because he has had a congenital heart condition, was not able to be treated as aggressively as someone without that condition. So he passed away. He will be enormously missed. I don't think there's a nonprofit in Tompkins County that Howard hasn't raised money for. I first met Howard probably 1994 when I was the development director at the Reconstruction Home, and he was the board committee chair for development. And he taught me a lot, and uh, he had the highest standards, and he got the results. And it was always with a sense of the mission, whatever the mission was. He's on the board of our library. He's been key to the Paleontological Research Institution. The first place where I met him, the Reconstruction Home. People can chime in. I mean, I think everybody knows. The Seward House in Auburn was, I think, of his a very special concern. So even though Howard lived in Moravia, I don't really believe that. He was really a Tompkins County resident. He was so committed to this community that it's really hard to imagine things without him. So at the moment, as when I turned off the computer before the meeting, we didn't have news of service details, but obviously we'll let everybody know. So that, and I wasn't sure whether I wanted to end with that one or this one, so try to lighten things up. We have some recognitions today. So if you will come up to the front of the room. Please, Dave McKenna, in recognition of 5 years of outstanding service to Tompkins County.
If anybody can do the math, you know who else is up. Thank you, Dave.
Will Burbank.
Woo-hoo.
It says William, is that right? William, I've never heard you say William. 5 years.
Thank you.
Joe Mariana, and I know this is the correct name because he's not Joseph. It's just Joe Mariana for 5 years of outstanding service to Tompkins.
Which is actually 15 years.
That's right. Michael Lane, 15 years of outstanding service. Recognition of 20 years of outstanding service to Tompkins County, Jonathan Wood. And in recognition of 20 years of outstanding service to Tompkins County, Dooley Kiefer. Feels like 100, she said. Jonathan, you were there first?
I think I was here before Julie was here.
Well, I think there might be a rounding error. I don't know.
Not before Frank.
That's right. And that is my report. County Administrator's Report, Joe Mariana.
Thanks, Martha. I have to admit, I had to put my shoes on when I stood up to get my award. So I hope your new desks are as long as these so I can continue to do it.
Socks would have been fun.
A couple of items on the list, mostly in the way of updates. The livable wage work group got together today for the first time. We had an organizational meeting. I think there was probably more five-hour energy drinks consumed during that meeting than most because I kind of gave a long organizational preface to this entire thing. It looks like the group will meet about six times. We're going to try to do this work over the next 6 or 7 weeks so it doesn't drag on forever. I think the only thing I'd point out at this point with respect to schedule, we'll be meeting every week, is at least we penciled in May 1st as a date to accept public input about the livable wage and get the insights and input of stakeholders into that. So that'll be May 1st. I think it's at 3 o'clock. We're going to look at the Lizzie Room as the location just in case we get a number of people who want to present some information to us as a part of that. Also in the way of update, the Human Rights Search Committee will get together for the first time this week. I believe it's Friday, so we'll get that process going. Also on April 30th is our budget retreat. This, I think, is the third notice for the budget retreat. We don't want you to not put that on your calendar. This is probably the most important meeting of the early part of the budget process, so that's April 30th. I think we're doing it at TCAT, as we have in the past. Couple of other things. Some time ago, the legislature approved a resolution asking the state to authorize us to dedicate the proceeds of a quarter-point mortgage recording tax to mass transportation, which is to TCAT. We worried a little bit that it wasn't getting much traction in Albany. I'm happy to tell you that the Assembly now has introduced a bill. We have a bill number. They're working with Senator O'Mara's office. I believe we'll have a bill on the Senate side very soon. Once we get those bill numbers, we will need to come back to you to say this is what we want you to do. So I'm expecting that pretty soon. I think we can keep that on the regular meeting schedule. But if there's urgency, if it looks like Albany is going to go home early this year, I don't think they will. But if so, we may ask for some extraordinary meetings. But at this point, I think we can stay on the regular meeting cycle. Couple other things. The airport, Martha touched on some of the major things. We've really been hard at work trying to get the feds to come to their senses and restore funding for the tower. Martha described what we're doing with the congressional delegation. We've had good contacts with both Gillibrand, Senator Gillibrand, and Senator Schumer's office, including Senator Gillibrand directly. We've also worked with Congressman Reed. He'd asked a couple of weeks ago for arguments to help him make the case for us in the airport. We provided him with that. We've talked to the governor's representatives, and as you recall, we have a twofold strategy or hope for the governor's office. For the lack of a better description, we're seeking love and money. We would like the governor's help as we talk to Washington about the restoration of federal money for our tower. But as a fallback, we believe it's in the state's interest to make sure that we have a tower that's operational. And we'd like to engage the state in a discussion about a financial strategy to keep that tower open. I think the last thing I would say with respect to the airport is, as a deep contingency, we are beginning to draft an RFP for contract air control service there. Contingent upon finding funding to keep the tower open. So this is not telegraphing that county dollars will be involved here, but let's say that we are successful with the state and the state's willing to do something to help us keep that tower open. We still need to go through a process, a restricted process, to select a vendor. So to make sure that we've covered all bases, Bob Nicholas has drafted a first draft of an RFP. It's being reviewed by Jonathan Jackie and I think Lisa Hall and David Squire's office. So all of that is happening with respect to the airport. Whenever we talk about the airport, we have to make sure that we let people know, keep coming. It's safe. We're flying. Schedules have not been affected. Safety has not been diminished. I will tell you that there are some people who are concerned that they may be changing their bookings because they fear that there will be an effect on service. They shouldn't be. Our focus is on the long term. It's strategic. It's looking way out ahead to think about the consequences of this thing on the long term and what we need to do to avoid the adverse consequences. So we would encourage people to keep using our airport, and they're going to find that service is just as good as it's always been. My last item is the U2O initiative on Raise the Power of an Illusion. We've had wonderful community support at the State Theater. That's really a tribute to Paula and Shelley Michelle Nunn and Bridget Huberman and others who have pulled this together, but hundreds of people at the State Theater. But also, you should know, we are hosting showings in our own facilities for our own employees at Health, Mental Health, DSS, Public Works, and in the downtown campus. So those are ongoing. So I think that's my report.
Thank you, Joe. Very well said about the airport. Appreciate that. Carol, then Mike.
Yeah, just the Raise the Power of the Illusion, of an Illusion presentation. I managed to reach the first one and not the second, but it was really well done. The film is very interesting. I encourage people to try to see it. And I believe it's being shown on Channel 15? 13? Periodically. Each segment each week. Mm-hmm. If you haven't been able to attend, and it's worth seeing.
Martha, could I realize, sure, in my notes I forgot one thing about the airport.
Yeah.
we have filed the lawsuit. And the lawsuits have been consolidated out in the Ninth Federal District out west?
Circuit.
And Jonathan has been very much involved in that and involved in some conference calls over the last day or so. So that is also a strategy that we're pursuing.
Thank you. Mike and then Leslin.
I just want to say, Joe, I think that folks in Tompkins County are understanding about this issue with sequestration and the tower. And I don't think that they're going to not use our airport. I talked to some people from Dryden today who are headed for New Zealand out of Ithaca tomorrow. There's no fear there.
Great. I think the issue is not as much people leave from here, but will people who are visitors decide to come here or decide to, well, maybe it's better to go to Syracuse or somewhere else. So, but thanks, Mike. Leslin.
Thank you, Joe. You were talking. I wrote myself a big note. Mm-hmm. Safe airport. And you're right, Mike. People will fly, but it doesn't hurt for us to continue to let folks know that our airport is one of the best airports you can fly out of. It's friendly and pretty much hassle-free. Mm-hmm. So we really encourage people to continue to use the Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. That's a message we want to continue to get across to individuals. And like Joe said, we are continuing to work on our end to make sure that our federal government will come to its senses around air traffic control. The other thing, Joe, that I wanted to ask you, and I'm sorry I couldn't be part of the Living Wage Committee, but I will be poking my head in, as I told you. There's a 3 p.m. meeting, but I wonder if you all would consider having another meeting at 5:30, because a lot of people who might want to speak to this issue can't come at 3 o'clock. They are at those jobs that don't pay a living wage and won't allow them to get off at 3 o'clock to come speak. So if you will, you know, bring that back to the committee to have one of the
I will.
At
and
second
our goal,
time.
Yeah, our goal is certainly to get good public input. So.
That would be very, very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslin. All right, County Attorney's report, Jonathan Wood.
Thank you. I do want to follow up on Joe's comment about the lawsuits, just to explain what is going on in our lawsuit and the other lawsuits. As I'm sure you heard, there are a number of airports around the country that are suing the FAA. I count about 20, as well as a trade association, which includes most of the airports, including ours. The FAA, as all of you know, is a federal agency. The way one generally challenges final determinations of federal agencies is to bring a suit in a federal circuit court of appeals, which sounds kind of odd because they're not appeals, but that's the way it works. And it's typically done either in the place where the federal agency is, which is typically in Washington, and there's a D.C. circuit, or in the place where you are, which in our case is the Second Circuit, which is centered in New York City. However, in a case where there are quite a few parties suing the same federal agency over the same issue, instead of proceeding in the many different circuits, they're typically consolidated in one circuit, which is basically chosen at random. And in this case, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers much of the West, but is centered in San Francisco, California, was chosen as the circuit, which will essentially host the lawsuit. Currently, our suit is still in the Second Circuit. There's a process. It is transferred to the Ninth Circuit, which will happen, I expect, in the next few days, and then it's consolidated with other cases, many of which are also transferred to the Ninth Circuit. On the substance of the lawsuits, the challenge is basically that the Federal Aviation Administration failed to follow its own policies, particularly its safety policies, as well as the NEPA, the law governing the environment. The biggest focus is on their own rules and policies. The FAA has, well, the Department of Justice, which represents the FAA, has submitted a schedule to the court. It's a proposed schedule to the court, which the petitioners agreed to, which would call for expedited briefing and hopefully an expedited decision. But one can't force the court to decide anything in any particular time period. Interestingly, the first thing that has to happen in a challenge like this is the agency has to file the record. And at the moment, the airports really have no idea what that record is or what it consists of. According to the proposal of the FAA through the Department of Justice, they will file that record April 24th, so we'll know a lot more about the legal arguments then. One thing that is somewhat unique about our suit is that we included the individuals who work in the tower, and we did that for two reasons. One is that the parties may seek a stay, in fact probably will seek a stay in the event that the court is not able to decide the substance of the case before June 15th. And to get a stay, you have to show irreparable harm, and the harm that's suffered by those people in the air that actually work there is different and additional to the harm of the actual airports in that they will lose their jobs. And also, one of the things that the FAA is supposed to do, but did not do, in doing their safety review is to include stakeholders, and certainly the people who work there, the air traffic controllers, would seem to be stakeholders that they should have included. So we did that to help strengthen the arguments that the group would have to make. We won't probably brief separately. The idea is that all the petitioners will join together in one or two briefs, and it will be on an expedited schedule. Hopefully there will be a decision before June 15th, but I doubt it. But I do expect that if there's not, we'll get a decision at least on our stay before then. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. I also want to note that Amanda Spellacy from Senator Schumer's office commented that the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee was holding a hearing today with FAA Administrator Huerta, and as she wrote it, that hearing was ongoing, but you can probably see it if you go to www.commerce.senate.gov/public. So the actual hearing and testimony from the FAA is very likely available.
Yeah, there was actually a lot of testimony on other subjects other than this, although there was a little on this. Most of it, I gather, concerned the use of electronics. When they tell people to turn off their electronics, people misunderstand that and are concerned about that, and various senators don't want them to do that. So that was a lot of the hearing was focused on that.
Oh, well. Okay. Any questions for Jonathan? Thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director David Squires.
I'll report briefly about sales tax. Today is the final. We received the final payment for the quarter. And so you'll be seeing some headlines about sales tax activity throughout the state in the press. It wasn't a good day to start off because when I saw the figures, this payment was like $500,000 less than last year. But surprisingly, because the first 2 months of the year were so good, that even losing this $500,000 in the payment we received today, we're still going to end up the quarter over 2% over last year. So that's the good news. The bad news is that we'd been up 10% if we would have been the same amount we got last year for this payment.
It's all on how you look at it.
Yes.
Thank you, David. Any questions?
Yeah, just
Frank.
David, have you been able to look at what sectors were weak?
No. Actually, you can't really analyze that information because the data is always about 2 years in arrears.
Thank you very much, David. All right. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Pat.
Martha, I'm not sure exactly what the circumstances are. or how to do this, but I had to leave early from the last meeting because I wasn't feeling well, and so I wasn't here when the GO report was given, and Mike kindly handled it for me. But I understand that the ethics policy was not voted on at the last meeting, and I don't know if there was a decision made at that time as to when it was going to come back or the circumstances. I don't see any information on it in the packet this time, so I'm not sure what to do about that.
It's on the agenda as unfinished business number 15 at the end of the meeting.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I guess I missed that. Okay.
And so resolution number 52.
Okay. Yeah.
Looking for it. And it was, people were urged to bring the documents from last time because they were pretty extensive. I don't see the resolution itself, but we...
Packet page 91.
The very last page.
What was that?
The very last page of the packet, 91.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't forgotten.
All right, that's the resolution. All right, you're not withdrawing. You're asking the question?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. All right, then I will read the consent agenda. If you have anything you'd like pulled, just let us know. Resolution A, ID 4122, budget adjustment, HIT funding, health information technology from the New York State Office of Mental Health, increase for the Mental Health Department. Revised Resolution B, ID 4042, approval of budget transfer office for the aging. Revised Resolution C, ID 4118, budget adjustment to increase CHIPS revenue highway division. Resolution D, 4096, award of 2013 grants for art and culture organizational development, community arts partnership. Resolution E, ID 4095, award of spring 2013 tourism project grants. Did I hear somebody pull it? Okay. Resolution F, ID 4094, award of spring 2013 new tourism initiative grants. Resolution G, ID 4093, award of spring 2013 tourism marketing and advertising grants. And Resolution H, ID 4092, award of spring 2013 community celebrations grants. And appointments to the Office for the Aging Advisory Committee, Jenny C. Graham. The Human Rights Commission, Amos Malone, Sarah Reistetter Akiri, Luis Manuel Charis, Kathy Luz Herrera. To the Traffic Safety Committee, James Dennis. I guess that'd be Jim Dennis.
That's fine. My mother would recognize.
All right. Maybe if she were angry, right? Jeffrey Smith. To the Stop DWI Advisory Board, Alex Prashma. To the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Leslie McQueen Claiborne. To the Emergency Communications Review and Oversight Committee, Mark Bell. Make a motion on the consent agenda. Moved by Carol, seconded by Frank. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. For the patience and goodwill of the people in the audience, I would like to ask Mike if you would take up... No, I guess that would be Pat. For Government Operations Resolution I, and there's a revised version.
Where is it?
Revision should be in your red folders.
65.
Okay.
It's right up at
64,
but it's an
extra. Yes, I'd like to move Resolution L, which is ID number 4060, revised as adopted by the Capital Plan Review Committee, renaming of the old courthouse as the Governor Daniel D. Tompkins Building. I'm sorry, because that's an I. It looks like an L
right.
on my paper. Resolution I.
And that's the revised, you said the revised version?
That's the revised version.
Thank you. Seconded by Mike. Pat.
And if it pleases, I would like to see if Mike would like to speak to that.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to speak to it, but I'd like to defer initially to our county historian, Carol Kamen, and I think I'd like to hear her comments on this, if she would, please.
Please, Carol. Welcome. Thanks for being here tonight.
Thank you so much. This and I don't agree. In 1817, when the county was formed, it was named for Daniel Tompkins, who had been four times the governor of the state of New York and was considered to be the most popular man in the state, and also was the state resident who held the highest position in the country as vice president of the United States. So it was an honorific. He never came here, so it was not that he ever did anything here, but he was tremendously popular in the state. But the question really is, why should we name this building now for Daniel Tompkins? Mm-hmm. And I think there is a really very good reason. And that has to do with the fact that when he was governor, he signed the bill that ended slavery in this state. And that was not a random act. It was something that was of concern to him all his life. And it was also of concern to the people who were living in the various towns that became Tompkins County. We had probably about 50 to 65 people who were held in slavery in 1817 when the bill passed. They didn't get immediate emancipation. They were emancipated in 1827. And it was so important an event for them that they did not participate in the 4th of July in 1827, because that was the last day of that under which they would be slaves. But they had a marvelous celebration in the city of Ithaca on the 5th of July, 1827, when there were up to 10,000 people in the streets of Ithaca. There weren't that many streets, there weren't that many people here, but this was a gala celebration, starting with a prayer service over in what was called Butternut Grove, which is basically where the Methodist Church is today. They paraded through town, and they had celebrations through the day, and they had prayer meetings, and then they had a gala dinner at the Jackson Tavern. I have no idea where the Jackson Tavern was, but there was a big dinner, and then some of the young people left because they went down into the community to have ice cream. So it was a very special day, and Tompkins signed the legislation that made New York finally free of slavery. In 1840, New York also passed a very important Personal Freedom Act, which was pushed forward by our then governor, William Henry Seward, which meant that any person who had been a slave who was brought into the state of New York was not required to be sent back into slavery. That once you had reached New York soil, you were a free person. This is worth remembering. It's part of our history that many people don't know, and I think it's something that causes us to stop and use Daniel Tompkins as a name for the courthouse, but also as a way of educating people about what happened in the past. We have come a long way. There's more to go, but we've come a long way. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Carol.
Thanks, Carol. I would add another important thing that Daniel Tompkins did, and that was he was governor during the War of 1812, which lasted several years, as we know. And we all know about the burning of Washington and the Battle of New Orleans, but there were some major battles going on in New York State and in the Niagara frontier, in the Adirondacks. And it was Daniel Tompkins who organized the militia at the request of our federal government. Actually signed for some of the loans personally so they could equip the militia, and probably secured our borders at the locations that they were before that and where they still are. Otherwise, probably we would have lost a big chunk of New York State to Canada back then. He was very well respected for that. As a youth, he attended Columbia College. He was the valedictorian of the class down there, and we're fortunate to have some of the little essays that he wrote about such things as eliminating slavery and eliminating capital punishment and various things like that that you would expect from a young college-educated person. But it says something about his character that followed through on his governorship. And certainly being governor was the thing we remember him the most about in New York State. Probably not as great a vice president, but he was certainly a superb governor.
Thank you very much, Mike. Dooley.
I'd like to ask that Carol Kamen's and Mike Lane's remarks be in our minutes.
Can we do that? Thank you. Good point. Good suggestion.
And I have a suggestion for the resolution. Okay. I can't leave things alone. I'm sorry. In the second resolve, in the first line, it refers to the standard 10-year review designation. I think it should say 10-year review requirement.
Couldn't hear you.
10-year review. I think it should say 10-year review requirement. Requirement. Rather than designation.
Is that friendly? Friendly. Okay, Pat, that's friendly. Okay.
Is it review requirement designation or just review requirement?
The 10-year review requirement.
Delete designation.
Okay.
Carol?
So I don't have strong feelings about the name, you know, the actual name. I think this is a good choice. I, you know, I know the committee looked into this, and he certainly seems like a worthy recipient, and you know, he shares the name of our county. I have a question about this addition, the 10-year review requirement, where that comes from, and anything about the purpose of the 10-year. Is there really supposed to be a 10-year lag time between the proposal for a name and the naming? And
yeah. Mike?
There was a policy review a number of years ago. It came up mainly because there were a lot of people wanting to name conference rooms for particular people. And the Government Operations Committee looked at that issue back then, and we said, yes, we would allow namings, for example, for conference rooms, but we'd wanted them to be able to be re-looked at after 10 years. I don't think it was something we were as concerned about with building names, because frankly, we weren't building that many buildings, but that's where it came from. There, it is in policy.
So it's in the books now that we name something, and 10 years later, it's in our calendars to revisit it and see, do we still want that name?
Yes.
And what we're proposing here is that we waive that
yes.
process by this resolution. First of all, so can we do that? Is that
I think
since
we can
it's
do
in our
whatever
policy?
We want. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought I was saying it that way.
I think the idea is that this is meant to be a permanent designation. Right. Will?
So I must say, when I first saw this resolution, I was not in. Thinking it was a good idea, I said, well, we already have a county named Tompkins. Why do we have to do this twice? And I actually called up Carol and said, if it, you know, was he the only person of note in that era? And she said that actually, you know, that he was very, very much outstanding, and that she was hard pressed if I heard to think of anybody else that would be a better at this point. I think. I really appreciate, Carol, what you said in terms of reminding us of the history of slavery in New York. I think it's something we don't think about. We think of it as being down south, but in fact, they were integral and just played a huge role in the early history of our country. The state literally was built by slaves, and that's something that I think we should not allow ourselves to forget. And I think the committee was wise to do this. I hope that we can capture some of that history, or reference it at least in the plaque that I assume will be going up on this. So I will support this resolution.
Kathy,
I would, however, as one thing that as we move forward and consider other names, I would invite us to consider maybe opening up the process of naming to the broader public and inviting people to suggest names, because there are many other people have flowed through our community of note, and I think that we should be trying to remember those and invite our voters to really enter into a discussion.
Kathy Lucy, do you have your hand up?
Thanks. Yeah, I was happy to hear that there's going to be a plaque, but while I was listening to the rationale behind it, it occurred to me that it would be great if other people could hear this. Okay, a hologram of y'all speaking. I don't know, but a plaque is nice, but it doesn't really say the whole story. So because the rationale really helps me in being more inclined to support it than just, okay, here's another old white guy that we're going to honor, so what else is new? Sorry to put it so bluntly, but I think it's great to know why. For me, that really makes a difference. I don't know if you'd mind, Carol, if we had a hologram, you know, kind of, you know, of you explaining and then Mike explaining. I don't think it would hurt the county budget too much. Oh, yeah, it probably would. Okay, so I'll withdraw my comment.
Well, we can have information on a plaque. I mean, the more you put on a, we couldn't put all of this on one of those brass plaques, but maybe we can find a way to make it clearly evident to people what the history is. Leslie?
So, Will, I was where you were when I first read this. I didn't make any phone calls to Carol, partly because I thought I'd heard some of this history before, and just thinking through, and partly where Kathy was as well. This building sits in my district, and I can just imagine perhaps some of the phone calls I get with people asking, you know, why wasn't there, you know, input? People always have a ton of names of people who they want to name things after. And I have the same thought. It's like, okay, we have the county. Why do we need to do this as well? so I was really hard-pressed coming here thinking, you know, do I support this? And I still feel, I'm still a little tentative. But I would appreciate what Will said, if as we consider things like this in the future, that we allow for some public input. Because this, I mean, it's a public facility. And maybe people may have some comments and maybe they wouldn't. And we can weigh those and come up with a decision that folks can feel like, you know, they had some say in the business as well. So thank you. But thank you for doing it.
I would point out that it did go through two different committees. I just want to make sure everybody understands that. Carol and then
Peter. I beg your pardon?
This resolution went through two different committees of the legislature. So
that's all right. I'm not on either one of those committees. So.
Okay.
And it's not the same as it going before the public.
Carol and then Peter.
I appreciate the history. I'm still sitting here a little bothered by, in order to recognize the liberation of slaves, we're going to name it after, as Kathy points out, an old white guy. So I'm just sitting here wondering if it's possible on that plaque to put, in much smaller letters, obviously, the names of the slaves, the people who were still enslaved and freed on that night that Carol just so eloquently described, or in some other way to recognize and make clear that that is what our intent is to recognize here.
Can I respond?
Sure.
That's hard.
Yeah, that's really hard.
That's hard.
The census only counted slaves with a slash, so we don't have the names of all of them. My estimate of 50 to 65 is based on a lot of very iffy material. I can't tell you exactly how many slaves were actually in the county from 1802 to 1827. There was a slave burying ground, but the markers have long been gone, and nobody can find the ground anywhere. I think it would be hard to mark, but maybe we could prepare a pamphlet to be available in the building that might talk about this history. And I think Tompkins is more than just the act, Daniel Tompkins is more than just the act about abolition. It's just that it gives us an opportunity to do some education. Since otherwise, he was never here. If I could have found you a woman, believe me, I would have brought you a woman. But I can't do it.
I think we can certainly have conversation about how to designate this, what a permanent plaque might include, what other material we might be able to put in that, maybe in the lobby or whatever. I mean, we don't have to do that tonight.
Well, I brought the county an early lithograph of Tompkins that could be put up with a legend underneath it, and you know,
I think there are reasons not to do it, but I think there are some good reasons to recognize him.
I would like to I would like to refer that challenge to develop and propose what how to recognize this to go to the Capital Plan Review Committee, and then I will go to Peter, whose hand was up next.
I have an observation and two questions for the historian, if that's okay.
Sure.
The observation is that I can't imagine people objecting to this. You know, great changes don't happen overnight. The slaves were not freed in 1864, whenever it was, just by the flick of a finger. It started 50 years before, and this may well have been the start. I don't know that it was the start, but I'm sure there weren't too many states that freed their slaves before New York. So to me, this has the characteristic of a genuinely important event in the history of our country. So that's my comment. And now I have two questions of our historian. The first is, where in the world did those 10,000 people come from? That's question number one.
I don't have a clue.
I mean, what was the population of the county at that time?
The population of the county in 1817 was, the county is, there were, I can't remember. There were 2,000 people who were in the, basically what the city and the town were. I've forgotten the number for the county. It was around 2,500,
yeah,
3,000.
Okay, right.
There weren't that many people.
It's amazing.
A lot of people. Now, 10,000 was also somebody's estimate.
Yeah.
It looked like a lot of people.
Okay.
So 10,000 sounded good.
All right. Don't sit down. That was one question.
Okay.
The second question was, this comes out of the blue, so I don't know if you know the answer to this question, but we all know about the War of 1812, at least everyone who went to grade school when I did. We know the picture of Dolly Madison coming running out of the White House, saving the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or one of those things, a very powerful picture at that time. But a couple of years ago when we were up at in Niagara-on-the-Lake, which is a small Canadian city, there are a lot of historical plaques there. Turns out that Niagara-on-the-Lake was the capital of what is called Upper Canada. You look on the map, you think, how could that be Upper Canada? There's nothing below it, but that's Upper Canada, and the north part is, of course, Lower Canada, because that's the way the St. Lawrence River flows. But that the story on the placard was that the valorous troops of the United States Navy burned to the ground Niagara-on-the-Lake, and that the attack on the White House, on Washington, was in retaliation for that. Yeah. Is that, do you have any idea whether that's correct?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. But I believe it's true. There certainly was a lot of tit-for-tat going on. Can I just address your earlier point?
Yeah.
And that is, New York came late to the abolition of slavery. I'm sorry about that. Most of New England had abolished slavery, although there had been slavery in New England states. New York came a little bit late. And so it was catching up. But the whole issue of slavery was one of the big debates when New York founded itself, created itself as a state in 1777. And basically the issue was so difficult, as it was with the federal constitution, that they said, let's put it off. Let's not give blacks freedom and make them second-class citizens. Let's clear the deck and make them actually equal citizens. And by doing that, they postponed this opportunity for abolition. What they did say was that any child born of a slave after 1799 would be free at the age of 22 for a female and 26 for a male, which sort of works out to 1827. You know, so they were revisiting that whole argument. It was very difficult, and it was an argument, you know, we just didn't deal with very well. So we came to it when we did.
Yeah, thank you, and then Will.
Carol, don't sit down.
Yeah, I don't know very much.
Please. About the population. We've got, no, wait a minute. Wait.
Yeah.
We've all been, if you haven't seen it, next time you go in the trust company, you can see one. Some of us even have a copy. There's a map of the county that says 1852 on it. In very small numbers up on top, but there's a copy of it hanging in the trust company's lobby. Yeah. Hector was part of the county.
Hector was part until 1853.
And there were, I mean, it wasn't exactly as we know it now. And I challenge some of you to a little-known fact. I'll buy you an ice cream cone if you can find California on that map.
We tried.
Be quiet, Mike. We've had this conversation before.
Mike gets the ice cream. Come on.
1817, the county only consisted of the town of Ithaca, the half of the town of Lansing, or Milton, which was the town of Lansing, the town of Groton, town of Dryden, which is the only town that is still pretty much the same as it was originally, and Newfield, Caroline, and Danby were joined in 1823. Right. So the county has changed its shape. Right. Yeah. Will.
So when I called Carol, I asked a little more about Daniel Tompkins and learned that you were writing something, you're currently researching and maybe going to be writing a column on that, whatever. And you mentioned that there is some discussion about his the end of his life, which I guess he ended up impoverished, unfortunately. But it's not clear exactly why, except that Wikipedia seems to know. And they say that basically he funded this this well-regulated militia that defended New York and was not repaid or was impartially repaid.
He wasn't repaid by the state or by the federal government. He only got a partial repayment. He became ill after 1817 when he became vice president. I think there was a bit of alcohol involved. His family fell on bad times, and he basically died without a penny.
He too had problems getting payments from our state.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing much has changed.
If you ever want to have a interesting perspective on our local history, I would invite you to go across the border and just learn about things like the War of 1812 from a Canadian perspective. You'll hear a very different story, and it's very inviting.
But I'm sure they learned out about the Civil War.
Yes, that's also true. And if you'd like to find out about the history of our soon-to-be new home, but in fact is actually one of the oldest structures in our downtown and is a very interesting story. In 1976, the building was dedicated, and there were some remarks by Armin Adams, which Michael shared with me, and I'm sure we can make this available to everybody, but a very, very good discussion of the building's history and its architecture and I would encourage everybody to learn about it. It's a very, very interesting building. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
I just mentioned Karen Fuller researched and found that.
That's great. Thanks to Karen. Thanks so much to you, Carol, for all this information and for coming. I would like to say that I think we were talking at the Capital Plan Review meeting on Wednesday and talking about the old library, the old jail, the old courthouse. And was there another old something? I can't remember. And I thought, it's about time to have a name for one of these buildings. I really applaud the work that's gone into this and Mike's initiative. I really appreciate that. Mike's sense of history is important to all of us, and I'm proud to support this. And I wonder if there's anything else to add. Ready to vote then on Resolution I with that small change that was made. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? 13-1. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks you, Carol.
Everybody. Thank you very much.
Now, Ed left. I was wondering why he was still here. When there wasn't a plan, there wasn't actually any planning business on here. Paula, are you waiting in particular for, okay, let us go to unfinished business, the last page of the packet.
Pat, would you like to take up resolution number 52? Pat, I think the first action is to lift it from the table since it had been postponed. So a motion to lift it from the table is in order.
Okay, I would move that we lift resolution 3903, adoption of local law A of 2013, amending chapter 32, Code of Ethics, from the table.
Thank you, Pat. A second for that? Second by Pam. Peter.
I would like to move to postpone consideration of this this legislation for another 2 months, which would be the second meeting in June. And if there's a second for that, I'll explain why.
Is that a second, Kathy? Okay, seconded. Go ahead, Peter.
Well, I really would prefer to defer to my colleague, the chair of the committee, to make that explanation. Is that okay, Pat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The primary work that was done on reviewing the Code of Ethics happened before I was chair of the Government Operations Committee. But I was on the Government Operations Committee, and I did ask a lot of questions as we went through the process, but one that kind of stuck with me, one comment that was made as we went through the process, was to the effect that, it was from our county administrator, who made known to the committee that, there were apparently some concerns on the part of some staff as to the definition of family that we were discussing. But we don't know exactly who those staff were or exactly what those concerns were. But that raised for me the question of why we were talking about making so many changes in a policy that was going to impact all employees without having any input directly from staff other than those of us that were on the GO committee or sat in the GO committee meetings. And then when I became chair of the GO committee and I started understanding, I sat down, I had several meetings with different people, but one of them was Paula, and I took that opportunity to really bend her ear about understanding better the difference between what the Code of Ethics, which is will become a local law when it's passed, versus the Administrative Policy Manual, which has many of the same items in it under what is called the Standards of Conduct. And the question that I asked was, well, if we go ahead and pass this Code of Ethics, then we're going to have a local law governing our Code of Ethics, but we would have our Standards of Conduct in the Administrative Policy Manual that would have different language. And how are staff, how are employees to know then, are they going to be familiar enough with this to understand that it would have to be the local law that governs, and why would we have two different sets of language? And going from there, I also talked to Jonathan, and Jonathan explained to me that it's common practice to go ahead and pass a local law and then bring our policy into compliance with that law. The problem that I have with that process, if we go ahead and pass this local law right now, is that the local law will take precedence over county policy. I'm assuming we would have to bring our policy into compliance with the law once we pass it. And given that the law itself didn't have any opportunity for staff input, then we would have to change the county policy to be compliant, regardless of what our staff might think, whatever input they might have as part of that process. If the local law said differently, it would have to be brought into compliance with the local law. My concern is that we go ahead and do, or what I would like to see happen, I should say, is that we review the standard of conduct using our standard policy for those reviews, and just see what emerges. Maybe we won't have any particular concerns from staff. Maybe they'll look at it and say, it's all fine, and we can just go ahead and make these changes, and it will be a fairly simple process. On the other hand, I think staff should have the opportunity to say to us whatever they would like to say to us about the standards of conduct before we make the assumption that we're going to pass the local law and then we're going to bring the standards of conduct into compliance with it. So what I am asking for, and what Peter is proposing with his motion, is time enough to review the standards of conduct following our regular review procedure. And I talked with Paula today. It will be a very tight time frame for us to do it in the time frame that Peter has set in his motion. But I would like to have the opportunity to do that and assure ourselves that we are not making these changes without our employees having the opportunity to be heard. And that doesn't mean we're going to let them tell us what we're going to do. We still have to vote. We are the ones that make the decision. But I think we have to at least listen to our employees.
Understood. That's okay. So the date would be what date again? Is it to a specific date, the motion to postpone?
I think Peter's
second meeting in June.
Second meeting in June. Okay. All right. Everybody who wanted to speak, raise your hand again. I wasn't sure who. I'll go Kathy, Carol, Peter, and Dooley.
Thanks. Mine is just a quick question. You indicated, Pat, in your comments that it was a short time frame. Mm-hmm. Is there a more realistic time frame that you'd suggest?
I'd suggest at least 3 months, which would be the second meeting in July.
Since I seconded, I'm not allowed to amend
right. The
motion, am I? Okay, to that.
Okay.
Carol?
Mine has to do with content, so if this is on the delaying. Well,
yeah,
I'll just go ahead and say, I was prepared to just vote on it tonight, if that's what came up, and not insist on these two things being looked at again.
Okay, but Carol, if this is about the content of the code itself, yeah, that's not what we're talking about now.
Okay, well, can I have a chance, if it is sent back to committee, can I have a chance to just say here?
Sure, because if it's not sent back to committee, then we'll be talking about the law itself. Okay? So we'll put you at the top of the next list. Peter, and then Dooley, and Frank.
Yeah, it's my understanding that the way Robert's Rules treats this is that it doesn't need another motion to come back. It will automatically be on the agenda for that second meeting in June. It's postponed till then. It's not at anyone's discretion to take it off.
Right, but then at that point we would move to lift it from the table.
No, we don't lift it from the table. It simply appears on the agenda, I believe.
Well, lifting it from the table is the same as moving the motion.
No, but I'm saying that in the agenda that comes out, it should have this as part of the. It just automatically appears
just
on that.
Just as it did tonight, because that's what we did 2 weeks ago.
Well, I think we did it wrong. I think the motion to lift from the table. That's a motion that goes with tabling. That's not the way I've heard it ever done before. It just appears automatically on the agenda.
All right. Thank you for your advice. Dooley?
I think to save time, I will read out loud an email that I sent around to department heads today. It's an email that I wish Pat had done when this first came into her head that it should be delayed for department head input. What I wrote was, as I'm sure you know, the county's code of ethics has been under review for revision since the New York State Comptroller's audit, approximately March 2010. The county administrator referred the comptroller's suggestions to the Ethics Advisory Board, which I chair, and the first outcome was the new whistleblower policy. Thereafter, the Ethics Advisory Board did a thorough review of the code, comparing it to the state's model code and to other relevant documents, and finally sent a revised code on to the Government Operations Committee, where it underwent a line-by-line review. And that's literally, Mike Lane read it out loud. We had to sit and listen to it and consider every line. And it finally emerged as a proposed local law. The legislature held a public hearing on this local law at its March 19th meeting, and no one spoke. Of course, then the spotlight was on the New York Safe Act, and there were hours of public comment on gun control. The legislature postponed action on the Code of Ethics local law until tonight's meeting. Then I wrote, unlike the process that requires that changes in the administrative manuals policies be circulated to department heads for review and comment, there is no similar process for local laws, which generally affect all residents and or the general public. However, this local law is specific to all county employees. I assume that if you had any concerns about the revised code, we would have heard from you. For example, department heads could have come to the public hearing. Nonetheless, if any of you would like an additional couple of weeks to review and comment on this particular local law, that's the Code of Ethics, please notify Kathy Covert before tonight's legislature meeting. So I checked with Kathy, and she only heard from one department head who was fine with going forward, apparently. I think that my letter went out too late in the game to get responses back from department heads in a timely manner. As I said, I wish that Pat or whoever else had these concerns had done this earlier. But what I understand would be possible is that we give a little more time for this letter to be responded to by department heads and send them, to make it even easier, a copy of the Code of Ethics, which they can review. And if they have any concerns about that, those should come back to the legislature, because strictly speaking, right now, the Code of Ethics is before the legislature. And as a legislature, we have not had any discussion ourselves before voting on it. And I think that's what it sounded like Carol was thinking of doing tonight. In any event, I am opposed to putting this aside for 2 months and trying to do a really quick look at the standards of conduct. I will note that the standards of conduct deals with many things that are not in the Code of Ethics. Just as the rules of the legislature deal with behavior, for legislators, the standards of conduct deal with behavioral matters other than ethical ones for employees. And I think that to take the time to look at the standards of conduct, absent the existence of a new code of ethics, is not a good use of time.
I'm going to ask for comments by Paul about what the process will be. Julia, but first I need to ask, because this has puzzled me for some time, what is the problem with delay while we invite an actual, you know, and give our staff an actual period of time that will be sufficient for them to really look at this?
That's what I'm suggesting. For the Code of Ethics, we will mail it out to them tomorrow morning and ask them to get back to us within a reasonable period of time. As I understand from our county attorney, the department heads meet on the second Wednesdays.
May 8th.
So they could do this in time for their department head meeting in May and get back to us as a group if they wanted, instead of doing this as individuals. But I'm not saying that we shouldn't make this extra effort, although I'm disappointed that we haven't heard from anybody. I think it's reasonable to do this extra step. which is different from taking time to review the standards of conduct.
Okay, if I can, so that we can try to clear this up, Paula,
Madam
would
Chair,
you like to?
Please remember that I'm next in line.
I've got Frank and then Pat, yeah.
Thank you.
Right, but I think if we can get the information here about what, when Paula said it would be, 2 months would be a tight time frame, and then there's a consideration of possibly 3 months. Could you tell us what, if we postpone this, what is your understanding? What is your, what was your plan?
Although I have been trying to follow the conversation, I too might be a little confused because I know that you as a legislature are talking about change to a local law. There is a, for the lack of a better term, a corresponding document that exists in the current administrative policy manual that's called the Standards of Conduct. So right now, if you look at current language, not anything that's been edited or updated, right now, if you look at current codes of ethics, and you look at the standards of conduct, you're looking at basically the same language. So what was asked of me is what would happen, or what would the time frame need be to change the standards of conduct? Well, I have not been directly involved in changing any of the language. So it's a little difficult to say. All policies are quite different. You know, you just don't know what you will come up against. Certainly there is the advantage of looking at the language changes that already exist, but then there also is the need to compare information that might still remain in the current standards of conduct that was not in any way updated in the Code of Ethics. And I just don't know the answers to any of those things. So there is the time that would be needed to update the standards of conduct and then take that revised document and proceed through the normal processes we have in place for changes to the administrative manual, which is separate from how you move forward with changes to local law.
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure if I answered the question, because some policies can just take a lot of time. There are many of you that have sat on different types of work teams and so forth with me. It really just depends on what you're dealing with and the content that needs to be updated.
Thank you, Paula. And okay, furrowed eyebrows. Did you want to say something, Joe?
There's always a risk that if I get involved in this, I'm going to make it more murky as opposed to clearer. But let me try. I think we're talking about two different things. One is a situation in which the legislature certainly has primacy, and that's to develop its code of ethics. And then it's up to kind of our side to figure out policy that would allow us to conform with that code of ethics. So I think as we have this conversation, we need to make sure that whatever happens is not meant to trump what the legislature decides to do. I hear two different approaches, though, to inviting input. One approach is to give a period of time where department heads can take a look at what's been proposed in the legislation that's in front of you now and take a few weeks and offer you comments about that proposed law. And then to bring those comments back and make a final decision about whether you want to approve the local law as written or not. So that's one path. It's a timeout that gives department heads time to do that, which would take into account that the department heads do meet monthly in early May. You can bring it back in the middle part of May. That's one. The second approach that's been talked about is the path of amending policy, which is multiple months. It takes probably 3 months or so to do, and that's what I think what Pat's talking about, that time to amend policy, and do that on a timeline that allows the policy to be amended and then come back to the legislature. It sounds like with that process done, that would then inform the local law. And if you're asking for a subjective opinion, not to get in the middle of this conversation
go ahead.
But what the heck, that's right. I've been here 5 years now, so I've earned one of these.
Feels like 15.
I think we can invite the input of the department heads and get good input and come back to the legislature with their comments, but on a timeline that doesn't take the 2 or 3 months that we would take to fully redo a policy. I think within a month or so, we should be able to work through that and come back. You can then make a decision based on what you hear from department heads, make a decision on the local law. We can then take that back and conform policy to the local law. I hope that, does that make it clearer or murkier?
Yes, so in that case, there's not a sense that the legislature's document would be changed, would be subservient, if that's the word, standards of conduct that are in our policy, but that the legislature's document, we would have the final vote, yeah, but an informed vote that says this is what, with due time to look at it, run it by other staff, run it by, you know, to talk about it at a department head meeting, with a month, you think, sufficient to do that at that level, then bring it back with any proposed changes, then we could make an informed vote on our document. Following that, a review of the policy, because we'd have our set, and then the policy for the standards should conform. And if there's any concern about the comptroller, as Dooley's message out mentions the audit from 2 years ago, we're clearly making progress down the complicated course. It's not that nothing's happening. So there's not a concern that we're sitting around. That's the way I understand that. Does that make a little more sense to folks? All right. I've got Frank, Pat, and Peter.
Okay, I want to take a couple of minutes here. First, I want Kathy to read the motion that's on the floor, which I think is Peter's motion.
Postpone the resolution until the second meeting in June 18th.
Till June 18th?
June 18th.
I'm one of the individuals that raised concerns about this policy change. One is because most of us around this table had not had a chance to review it. The only individuals that seem to have had any time were the individuals on the Government Operations Committee. In addition to that, Dooley's chairmanship or chairwomanship or chairship of the Ethics Committee, those individuals that are on that committee had input into this process. Yes, we were embroiled and distracted by a couple of other things, including the SAFE Act, as has already been mentioned. If any of you have had a chance to review this, you'll see that it's relatively a major change. There's a lot of red in those changes. So a couple of questions that I have in relation to that is, well, one certainly is, what kind of educational process has been discussed at GO or anyplace else to educate individuals who are going to be affected by this? And it goes beyond the 15 of us, perhaps 14 of us, next year sitting around this table. Because as I asked at the last meeting, or two meetings ago, this will affect every member of our advisory boards. That's every volunteer. They will have to be subjected to the financial disclosure pieces and everything else that's in red. Yes, Mike, you're wrinkling your brow, but that's exactly true, because I asked the question about who'll be affected by this new ethics policy. If you read that carefully, there's a lot of disclosure information that will have to take place. And those of you that deal with the 52-odd advisory boards that we have, it's tough enough to get a lot of people to step forward and volunteer their time. I don't know how, hopefully we'll be successful in getting individuals, but that's the question goes beyond that. What kind of educational process will we use, what has been used, to at least educate those people on what they may be subjected to? I don't see any harm in delaying this. As Martha has already mentioned and Joe has already confirmed, the compliance letter that we received 2 years ago We're making progress, albeit slowly. But on this one, my caution would be, you know the saying, make haste slowly? I think in this case, we ought to, because it's going to affect a lot of individuals and a lot of new individuals who may be running for office at different levels, particularly that, well, certainly at our level, because they may not be aware of what they're getting into either. So I don't know who the right person is to address the question to about education, but what kind of effort will be made regarding educating the general public who might be affected by this? And my third point, and then I'll stop. I appreciate the email that Dooley sent out today, finally asking for input from individuals who will be affected by this. If I heard right, we have been at this process for 2 years. Why hasn't there been, regardless of who the chairman of GO is now or has been, or the chairman of the Ethics Committee, why hasn't the public or the people that could be affected by this, why haven't they been drawn into the conversation before this? Today, an email goes out asking for that. I think that's a little inappropriate. So I agree with Peter's motion. I certainly agree with Pat's effort to delay this for an appropriate period of time. I don't know if a month is the right time or 2 months or what, but enough time so we can really review it, so that GO or whoever the appropriate body will be, I think that's at Martha's direction at that point, can actually get into reviewing this. And I challenge all of you to read this too, because we really do need to get to our advisory board individuals. And I want to thank Pat for really taking the time to get into speaking with a lot of us on the impact of this. I want to personally thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Martha.
Thank you, Frank. Pat, I worry about sending it back to the GO committee. I think we'd have five resignations in a minute. All right. Pat, Peter, Dooley, then Mike.
A couple things. First of all, to clarify for you, Carol, it has not been my intention. It was not my intention with the process I described to bring the ethics policy back to the GO committee and open it up again. I was simply suggesting, and what Peter made motion was to postpone the consideration of it by the legislature. At this point, the only way that I would see that we would open it up again would be if something emerged from discussions with staff that would cause whatever committee was considering it to think that it should be opened up again. But I was not suggesting that we automatically do that. I'd also like to say that I appreciate your thoughts and your comments. Joe, this is a tough situation, and I do not like being in this position. I think that Dooley has done an excellent job of shepherding this through both the Ethics Advisory Board and the GO Committee. I'm not trying to cause unnecessary consternation over where we are with this at this point, but my goal all along has been and still remains to make sure that staff has an adequate opportunity to have input. And whether we do it as according to the motion that's on the floor right now, or if we make some change to that in accordance with what Joe has suggested, I would have a question. If we do it according to what's been, according to the motion on the floor, my assumption was that if in reviewing the standards of conduct, if something emerged that seemed to be markedly different than what is in the proposed code of ethics, then we would have to take another look at the code of ethics. My question would be, if we go through the process that you described, Joe, of simply taking the code of ethics to a meeting of the department heads and asking them ahead of time to think about it and perhaps make recommendations, I think is generally what you're suggesting. what do you envision happening then if there are things that they do think should be changed? I mean, where would that input go? What would happen next? Is there an opportunity, as you describe it, then to open up the question of the language in the Code of Ethics, if necessary, after that process?
You're not going to like this. I think it would go back to GO.
Well, I'm not opposed to having it come back to GO, but would the assumption be that if necessary, we would then make changes in the Code of Ethics if we felt that was appropriate?
Sure. I think that's why you want the input, to see if there's anything that you may have missed or that you want to think through again. So that's why I would think it would go back to GO for you to...
Because we're talking now about an extra, whatever you want to call it, process. It's not in accordance with our normal procedures. And what I was trying to do was operate within our normal procedures. So I just want to make sure we have all these questions answered if we're going to go into something that's not part of a procedure that's already spelled out.
Well, my own sense is that this... I mean, so, Carol, your comment about I want to mention some content changes. I mean, this is before the legislature. It's come out of committee. Whatever else happens before we actually get to talking about the content, it'll be before the legislature, and the legislature can at that time hear everybody's input. Well, you know, about changes, including what's come from staff. If we agree here that, you know, such and such a section has to be changed, and it appears that it's a substantive change, that's okay. We can do that. We may have to have a public hearing depending upon the level of the change, another public hearing. But, you know, this is, remember, we you know, it's like everything else that's worked on in committee and then comes here. It's here now, and we can always make changes. As long as you have 8 votes, you make a change. This is not an up or down vote, and you just have to take it whole hog as it is. All right, I've got Peter, Dooley, Mike, Carol, Pam, and then Jim.
I just want to know what the resolution is. I want to know what we're voting on. I mean, the exact
resolution. We are discussing whether this should be tabled or postponed till the second meeting in June.
So that's the only thing that we are authorizing at this point. We are not authorizing looking at the other section of this thing at all. We're just looking at postponing action on this.
Yes, and I think the conversation is around if we postpone it, it's to do what?
Okay, so as long as that's not in the resolution, because it's not clear to me that we agree on what we are going to do with it once we postpone it.
Right, okay. All right. Peter, Dooley, Mike, Carol, Jim.
Yeah, I am really surprised that we're spending so much time talking about this. This is a procedural matter. I have a lot of, I think our committee system is in general, it's a good thing that we believe that things ought to be vetted in a smaller number of people in the committee that has some expertise on this system because they've dealt with these issues. And I think that the chair of a committee has a special responsibility, and if a chair of a committee that I'm on comes to me and says, I think that this is not right for prime time, I think there's an issue here that has come up that I don't think we've considered, we have looked into thoroughly, and that we ought to postpone it, as far as I'm concerned, that's reason enough to postpone it, except if I happen to think that the request is absurd, which I don't think in this case. It sounds like a legitimate request. And I would have thought that this is a slam dunk. We have lived without an ethics code for 2 years or more. It hasn't really hurt anybody. And I think that there's no reason not to take to allow the committee to look at this new this new issue and bring it back to the legislature with it fully fleshed out. Okay.
All right. Well, actually, we have the existing code, which is in place. It's not that we have nothing. And also, you know, Peter, you didn't get one of those 5-year certificates yet. Maybe by the 5th year, you won't be surprised. Dooley, Mike, Carol, Jim, Pat.
Okay, first I would like to try to address Frank's question about education. One of the three topics that the comptroller suggested we deal with in more detail, in addition to the whistleblower, another one was training of employees in the code of ethics. And that, as you will know, if you read the draft code, is to be handled through personnel, that they will establish trainings at least annually. And how they do that, I don't know, because it's left in the commissioner's hands. So there is to be training. And whether the personnel commissioner includes advisory boards in that training, I don't know, but I think it's a good idea. Because they are, I think most of them, almost all of them, are bound by the code of ethics. So with respect to the schedule here, I think I agree with Martha rather than with Joe that if we postpone this to get department head input on behalf of staff, that they should be able to do that in time for their May meeting, the second Wednesday in May, which would allow those comments to come back and be part of our agenda for the second legislative meeting in May. And rather than, Joe, it coming, those comments going to GO, it would be up to the legislature to decide if that's what the legislature wanted to do, because right now the local law is before the legislature. And no legislators have made any suggested changes yet. We haven't had that discussion here yet, and I think that's what Carol was going to do quite a while ago. With respect to the comptroller's audit, that was not 2 years ago, that was 3 years ago, March of 2010. So this has been available to be read for a long time at different stages, but since GO moved it on to the legislature, it's been in our legislative agenda packets, so any legislator could, and I would hope could have read it, and I hope they have read it in time. So I would like to make an amendment to the motion that we postpone this until the second meeting of the legislature in May in order to give time for department heads to be consulted and to send us their comments.
Is there a second to that amendment? That fails for lack of a second.
Oh, man.
Mike.
Poll question.
Is there a second to that? That would be Jim. All right. Question's been called on whether to vote on the amendment, which is on the second meeting in June. All who are prepared.
Can you just read one more time what it is we're voting on?
Yeah, it is.
This is to end debate so that we can vote on the resolution, the amendment that says we will postpone this till the second meeting in June.
And was the decision that did or did not involve it going back to GO for any?
There's nothing about going back to GO.
They're going to have to arm wrestle.
There's nothing about going back to GO. There's nothing about going which process it goes to. All that motion says is to postpone this till for legislative consideration until the second meeting in June. It is time to vote on closing debate on that. All in favor of the calling the question, which is closing debate, please raise your hand.
Aye.
One, two. Opposed. That passes 10 to 4, so it's time to vote on whether we are going to postpone this to the second meeting in June. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? The pass is 10 to 4. So this is now postponed till the second meeting in June. What's the date, Kathy? Do you have it? June 18th. I will leave it to Pat and Joe and Paula to identify the process of seeking input from county staff as appropriate and desirable. Okay? I'd like to call a recess. Yes, Carol?
Yeah, I'd just like to ask that that you include Jonathan in that group. I think a couple of us have given him some comments.
Sure, I'm
about
sorry.
Definitions and things, so just include him, please.
I'd like to include Jonathan, whether you like to be or not. Thank you.
Martha,
all right.
Before you rule for a recess, can you restate what direction you just gave?
That Pat, Joe, Paula, and Jonathan will decide what method is appropriate and et cetera for getting input from staff.
Okay.
And they will carry that out by the second meeting in June.
Okay.
Then communicate to us in a timely manner what the staff input is. Pat?
Just because there seems to be a lot of angst about this, let me say that given this discussion that we've had here tonight, I feel I want to talk with Joe a little bit more about it, but I think that I would feel very comfortable going ahead with the procedure that he's described. Because, as I said before, my goal has always been to assure that staff had that opportunity for input. And I would hope that a part of what Joe is going to be asking department heads to do is talk to their staff so that it goes beyond just department heads and getting input. But I think we can work this out.
Kathy, Carol, Frank.
Thanks. I agree with Pat. I just am thinking about staff and how they're already doing more with less. And I'm not sure if we should feel good about imposing something else with a short deadline on them with the assurance that they're going to have time to review it, considering that it's taken us quite a while to review it up to its present state.
Thanks for the discussion we've had for more than 45 minutes. They will have 2 months. So however that works out.
I just wanted to note my concern about that.
Carol?
Yeah, I just want to clarify that this doesn't negate our own ability as legislators to pass along to somewhere, I guess it would be
of course
Jonathan,
not.
Concerns of, or suggestions about how
in fact, I would suggest if you already have comments, and I'm clipping people because it's so late and we have other business. I guess I am surprised, Peter. We had 10 minutes before our usual recess. I thought we could deal with this in that 10 minutes. Obviously, I was wrong. If you have comments, please put them in an email. Send them to all of us tomorrow. There's nothing to stop anybody from doing that. You have till June 18th. It would be great for people to know ahead of time what you're thinking. Frank, Jim.
Thanks, Martha. Joe, on that list of to-do, could we get a little more clarification on what the personnel, what the Commissioner of Personnel will do on education?
Yes.
Thanks.
Jim?
In that 5-year certificate you gave the county administrator, I hope there was tenure because I would really not like to see him get caught up in this discussion and people walk away feeling bad. And Carol said an interesting thing that it doesn't preclude legislators from working on laws and doing things. And I believe there's prima facie evidence that we're really not very good at doing this process. And I rest my case.
With that, we will take a 10-minute recess. Please be back in your chairs at 8:15.
Oh, you okay?